From Rochester, New York, this is Mad Dog Movies, Episode 7. Woo-hoo. Welcome to the show. This is Mike Boas. I'm an animator and a writer and nothing much else today.
And I'm John Vincent, filmmaker.
So this has been our first episode in a long time. We had a hiatus because, well, I can't think of any real good reason. Oh, wait.
I had a child. My wife gave birth to our daughter, Larissa.
Well, congratulations and chip, chip, cheerio and all that.
Thank you.
One of these days I'm going to have to come over and see the little thing.
Yes, the little girl, she's now a couple months old and...
I'm trying to give you your space, you know? You gotta be a dad and go smoke those cigars.
Yeah.
Well, congratulations.
Thank you.
And my excuse, I got my hair cut. That's, you know, that took up a lot of my time.
Wow, so that's great, man.
I had to get them one cut a day.
I'm glad you're finally out there living.
Yes. I have a lot less people hitting me up for weed now that I got shorter hair.
People don't think you're a street person now.
That's right. It's really quite nice to be respected. Because we haven't done a lot of podcasting, we're way behind on things that we wanted to talk about. But I'd like to talk a little about the Buffalo Niagara Film Festival we went to.
Mm-hmm.
We spent a day out there, and we met other indie guys like ourselves. We also met Roy Frumkes.
Oh, that's right.
He was cool.
Yeah.
Also, Herschel.
Herschel Gordon Lewis.
That's right. H.G. Lewis, the godfather of gore himself. I don't know if the mainstream public knows H.G. Lewis, but I think if you are an indie filmmaker or at least a fan of horror movies, you would have run across his name.
Well, who doesn't know 2000 Maniacs?
apparently.
Blood Feast.
Yeah, I had not seen 2000
Maniacs. The Wizard
Maniacs.
Of Gore.
Right.
Classics of American cinema.
And now a lot of them being remade.
Which is bizarre to me because they were, I mean, hey, they weren't very good to begin with.
No.
But
they were, you know, sort of... You know, whatever they had at their disposal, you know, they had $500. Let's make a movie for $500 or however much they spent.
Herschel Gordon Lewis, you got to give him, you know, got to give him some respect. I mean, he wrote those films, he directed them, and actually he was the cinematographer as well. And he wrote a lot of the music. And even though the pretty annoying music, he did write it nonetheless.
Boy, I got my fill of banjo music that night.
How many times can you hear Robert E. Lee broke a musket on his knee?
Robert E. Lee broke his musket on his knee, and 1,000 pieces shattered on the ground. But he looked up then, and he gathered up his men, and from his lips there came an awful sound.
And from his lips there came an awful sound. Yeah! Oh, the sound's gonna rise again.
He knows people love it. He goes around to these conventions a lot, and that's what this, you know, the Buffalo Niagara Film Festival had this one day that was all horror and sci-fi, and they ran it sort of like a convention. Greg Lamberson, who ran it that day, they had tables set up so you could get autographs from people, and they had some local celebrities. They had, of course, Herschel and Roy, Rod Godino from Rumorg magazine and his short film.
It was fun.
One of the things
I was surprised at is the kind of film community that Buffalo has. I mean, we're in Rochester, and we've had a different type of film community here in terms of we've done a lot of industrial films. We started out doing commercials, doing stuff for Kodak and Xerox. So we built up a group of people that started filmmaking from that perspective and then eventually evolved into doing, you know, feature films and short films and alike. Buffalo's a little bit different. You know, I didn't realize, but they have a lot of independent, you know, micro budget type productions going on there, which I think is kind of cool. Mm-hmm. I mean, I haven't had a chance to really see any of the movies yet, but the fact that they're actually making them there and getting them out and finding some kind of distribution, I think is pretty cool.
Yeah. And one of the persons we talked to is Emil Novak, who is big into that scene. And he also is part of the Buffalo Video and Movie Makers group. I can put up some links for that on our site, but I'd like to go to one of their meetings sometimes. I haven't been there yet, but they said, hey, if you want to bring some animation and, you know.
And for people who don't know, Buffalo and Rochester are like an hour and a half away.
Right.
You know,
right.
At the most, you know, that's in heavy traffic. You could get there in less than that. So the Western New York area, filmmaking seems to be alive and well.
Boy, the theater we went to, the Riviera.
Beautiful theater.
You know, we have the Odd in Rochester and the Eastman Theater. This is somewhere in between the two.
Well, it's like the old movie palaces. Yeah. You know, we don't, in Rochester, we really don't have any movie palaces anymore. I remember the last one that I remember was that remotely resembled that was the Coronet. And that was, and I saw King Kong, the original King Kong there for the first time when I was a kid. They had a reissue and back in the 70s. But that's gone now.
Yeah, there's
so it's all multiplex type, you know, 200 screens in a theater. Except we do have the little theater here in Rochester and the cinema, which are the two left over from bygone days.
You know what? Why don't I introduce here? When we were at the Buffalo Festival, I cornered Herschel Gordon Lewis and said, "Hey, I'd love to buy your music." And can you
which isn't
it for
very
me?
Difficult because he's about 200 years old.
but he is a ball of fire. Well, he loves to talk about selling and merchandising and marketing, because really that's what his training is in. And so I asked him a little bit about the biography that his partner David Friedman wrote, which I read a couple years ago. So here's that audio now.
What are the two questions that people usually ask?
Well, you're going to repeat this? All right. The first question they usually ask me is, who the hell do you think you are? Mm-hmm. The second question they ask is, where do you say you were last night?
and what do you answer to them when you
answer to that? You weren't there?
I read the biography of David Friedman last year. I don't know if you still keep in contact with him at all.
Constantly, yes. Dave is not in good health. His sight and his hearing both are failing, but he still is one. The most good-natured guy I've ever met, and two, the best carny guy who ever hit the film circuit. And he and I had really the most pleasant and enduring partnership I can imagine. Yes, a few weeks ago in Tampa, there was an event called the Gasparilla Film Festival.
Okay.
And the only reason I went was because they said Dave was going to be there.
Oh.
So we had we have an annual reunion. He now lives in Anniston, Alabama.
Okay.
Which is not on the main line to anywhere.
No.
But there's only one Dave Friedman.
His story's about Kroger Babb and the early days of road showing. Really inspirational. It's a different world out there now, but I think, you know, you can still road show a picture to film festivals and that sort of thing.
Yes, but you don't have any Kroger Babs around anymore.
No.
Kroger had the guts of a burglar and also sometimes the attitude of a burglar. A very rare. And he added a coloring to the film industry that I wish some of the major companies could use.
Yeah.
A lot of these movies come out with gigantic exploitation budgets, but not much exploitation expertise.
Right.
But is it possible to do it, you know, like 100 theaters at a time, or he'd focus on one city at a time?
Oh, yeah. Kroger would go from place to place, sometimes with a movie under his arm or in the trunk of his car.
Yeah.
But there's really no difference. If you're going to exploit a movie, it should be on the local basis as far as the, well, he called the local yokels understood.
Right.
The idea of mass exploitation, it's almost an oxymoron, because people realize they are being exploited, and when that happens, you've lost the whole effect of it.
Right. Right.
Did you ever take part in any campaigns like that, where you'd write letters to newspapers to protest your own film to get people interested?
I refuse to answer that question on the grounds that it may eliminate me.
Okay.
So that was Herschel. He's great.
Yeah.
They showed a DVD projection of 2000 Maniacs. I was hoping, hey, come on, film. But, you know, it's probably hard to come by. They didn't make a lot of prints of that.
Probably not. I think they probably had just a few prints and went around from city to city projecting
it. They used to roadshow those movies and really sort of pull out, you know, the weirdo crowd, the drive-in crowd, and who loved the blood and guts. The first really I ever read about those movies was in this book I've got a book, a stack of books here. Here's one from Joe Bob Briggs called Profoundly Disturbing. And he's got a whole chapter here on Blood Feast, the making of Blood Feast. And it's got posters and horrible, terrible, ugly things. And Blood Feast was the first one that he and David Friedman did together.
Yeah, he was really probably the first to really show the gore in to that extreme. People got to remember too, back when Herschel Gordon Lewis was doing this.
Yeah.
I mean, nobody was doing it. I mean, this wasn't seen. I mean, you know, this was probably not that far away from pornography, mm-hmm. the way that was this kind of thing was looked at.
Well, when Blood Feast came out, I mean, they didn't know what was going to happen. They set up OneDrive in to play it. And you know, they drove, you know, they got their wives and they went and they got in the car and they drove. This is somewhere in the Midwest. I don't remember exactly. And, they get there and they were half expecting no one to show up, but the, you know, the line of cars, there was a traffic jam of people trying to get into the theater. And what is this? Oh, they'd all seen the trailer and how gory and terrible, and they would sell it like if you have a weak stomach or weak heart or send your children away to, you know, even during this trailer.
Ladies and gentlemen. At this time, we are supposed to show you scenes from the picture Blood Feast, which will be shown as a late show next Saturday night. However, due to the extreme horror of the context of this picture, and due to the fact that this audience has not been forewarned, we will not show this preview. Instead, let us warn you that no children will be admitted during the showing of Blood Feast. In fact, there will be a policeman on duty at the box office to make sure they do not enter the theater. And if you're the least bit squeamish or have a heart condition, we strongly recommend that you not attempt to see this picture. A nurse will be on duty during the showing of the picture too, not as an advertising gimmick, but because she may very well be needed. See the picture if you must, but remember, we warn you.
But they would sell it on the gore, and then that was enough. They didn't need a plot or really good actors. They would.
Well, I think it was one of the first movies to actually deliver.
Yeah.
What it was advertised in the sense of
there were the Hammer movies around. Well, you know what?
Yeah, but they didn't. They
this
didn't.
Was,
you know,
63.
I mean,
this is,
you didn't see
yeah. the fact that they would show like a bloody eyeball in a jar was stunning
right.
for the Dracula yeah. and Frankenstein movies or just a few years earlier. So this was something that people were like, wow, this is something. So I went from the Joe Bob book to I tracked down David Friedman. His biography. He's got a naked woman right on the cover, which is nice. And this is, I got to lend this to you sometime. You
Naked's good.
Yeah, you got to read some of the stuff about how they would market in Baltimore and New York. And they had the 40 thieves. All these guys were like carnival barkers who would drive around the country and they would split it all up. They say, this is my sector, this is your sector, so that they wouldn't overlap. And, you know, because if they'd overlap, they'd piss off a community. And, hey, we just saw this, or what are you trying to feed us? And they'd get run out of town out of barrel, you know? So the 40 Thieves sort of had this gentleman's agreement to say, all right, we'd have this area, you'd have this area. And one of the things, I think it's Mom and Dad you're looking at there.
Yeah.
That goes back to the 30s. Kroger Babb was the guy who really taught Friedman everything he knew.
And this is what it says on the poster. Mm-hmm. Once in a lifetime comes a presentation that truly pulls no punches. Now you can see the motion picture that dares discuss and explain sex as never before seen and heard.
So they're selling, it was basically a melodrama about a girl who gets pregnant in her teens, and what are you going to do? Oh, she hadn't been educated about, you know, pregnancy and sex, and it's, you know, this horrible, horrible, terrible shame that's brought upon the family. And so they talk all about sex education, and then they show some films about STDs, like in the movie, and then they show some films of like a live baby being born. And that was enough to get people to come, and they would cloak it in education, but sell you on the fact that you really want to see these salacious things. So, and they'd make all their money on book sales. There'd be an intermission where they had women dressed as nurses. They weren't nurses. They'd come out and they'd sell you, you know, every man and woman, every boy and girl needs to have one of these books about sex ed because the Catholic Church won't tell you it, you know. So that was in the days before, and that Friedman worked with Babb and before hooking up with Herschel Gordon Lewis, who was actually a teacher.
Mm-hmm.
He was a professor, and they got together and they made a couple bad movies that didn't go anywhere, and then they hooked into nudist films and nudie cuties where they're doing
these. Daughter of the Sun.
Yes.
The most eye-filling sight under the sun. Introducing Miss Rusty Allen for adults.
So there was a loophole in the censors at that time, in the Hays Code. They were bringing over some movies from Europe at that time, some Swedish films and things like that, which had topless, you know, nudity. And they're like, well, it's art, so it's okay. And so then they went through a loophole that, well, if you shoot a movie in a nudist camp about nudists, that's okay because that's natural. So they would bring in their own actors because nudists are ugly. They would cast their own. You know.
Yes, folks. Everybody knows that nudists are ugly.
Well, you go to a nudist camp. Apparently, they tried this, and they said, "Okay, this isn't going to work." So they bring in their own women to play volleyball and jump around in the pool, and maybe even not even come up with a plot. So then they had like peep show movies that Russ Meyer also did movies like that, and eventually they sort of got tired of doing that. They said, "What else can we exploit?" And that's when they moved on to the blood and the guts.
I love the tagline here for 2000 Maniacs. Gruesomely stained in blood color.
That's right.
An entire town bathed in pulsating human blood. Madmen crazed for carnage. That doesn't get you into the theater. Nothing does, huh?
So that book by Friedman is called A Youth in Babylon. And at the end, I think he goes up through like 1970 or something. He doesn't get into the stuff that he did later on in his career. And he says, coming soon, the sequel to this book. But alas, he never, I don't think, got around to writing that book. So fun read. It's a little loose. He could have used an editor, but it's got some good stuff. Then I've got this other one that's called Bold, Daring, Shocking, and True, which is about the classic age of exploitation from the 30s up through the 50s. And it covers a lot of the same area, but it's a little drier. It's more like a textbook.
Do people still read books?
I do. I mean, I went and got these two books specifically because Joe Bob Briggs recommended them. Gosh darn it.
I tell you, it's the only way I got information when I was younger were books. There was no internet. And when I wanted to learn about filmmaking, it's either try to find the people that did it, call them and pick their brains, or get as many books and magazines as I could and read them. That's what I did.
Watching a documentary about the making of a movie tells you a lot, but you can only say so much and give so much detail in sort of a glossy documentary. So I think you need to actually read the history of these things if you want to know more about it.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a famous book. You've probably seen this one. It's from Research, a company in England, called Incredibly Strange Films. It's out of print now, but you can still find it on eBay and places. And it's just all these wonderful. It's all these wonderful.
Stopping on the naked women photographs.
Not just that. She's a naked clown woman. No, it's full of.
Sounds like my first.
It's got
date.
Interviews with Russ Meyer. It's got interviews with. And the reason I grabbed this is it had interviews with, of course, Frank Hellenlotter here. And Herschel Gordon Lewis had a couple with him. He had retired from filmmaking, and he went into a business doing junk mail. So he was like an expert in junk mail, and people would consult him on how to write junk mail and that sort of thing.
I'm looking at the book you just handed, the research book, Incredibly Strange Films. And in here is a film called Lemon Grove Kids Meet the Monsters. I actually saw this in the theater when I was a kid. I can't believe it.
Meet the Monsters? Is it like a monster school?
The Lemon Grove Kids Meet the Monsters. Fright Show, monsters, both on screen and alive in person. And if I remember, they had the creatures come around into the theater.
Yeah. That was a road showing technique for a while. There was Monsters Crash at Pajama Party, and there were a couple other ones where they would have... It would be a whole Saturday night thing.
I'm trying to find what year this was, because I did... My parents took me to see this, and I was really young.
It's coming, the world's craziest fun and fright show, the Lemon Grove Kids Meet the Monster. It's so scary, so crazy, we dare you to see it. We dare you to see the Lemon Grove Kids Meet the Monsters, the screen's funniest and wildest teenagers in the craziest fun and fright show you've ever seen. Weird and frightening movie monsters, not only on the screen, but in the audience, alive and in person. See the horrifying Mad Mummy come to life and go into the audience to get you. We warn you, don't come if you're chicken. This show is not for sissies. If you're not afraid, be sure to see the world's craziest fun and fright show, The Lemon Grove Kids Meet the Monster. 1,001 laughs, thrills, and chills. In widescreen and Eastman color.
The people out there who can't see the cover, there's a giant skull on the cover. from the movie The Mask, which I saw in 3D at the Dryden a couple years ago. It's hysterical, very strange. Every time the character puts on the mask, they get this psychedelic experience. It's in 3D, and that's when you put on your 3D glasses.
I'll tell you, some of the, you know, it's funny how they used to make these films. You know, I don't know if we talked about this in a previous podcast, but when I used to work for Charlie Band out doing the Full Moon stuff, Charlie would. You know how they come up with the movies? They come up with
an
idea.
The title or
no, not even a title. They come up with an idea for a poster.
Okay.
And he'd hire an artist. You know, say, hey, paint this image for me on the poster. And if it was good enough poster, he would say, all right, and you give it to a screenwriter, and they'd say, write me a movie.
Yeah.
That fits this poster.
Well, I just heard about. I was listening to something the other day about you know, classic days of like Silver Age comic books and how guys in charge of DC. He would do the comic book cover first, and or tell the artist what to paint, and then give it to the writer.
Right, it's the same, same principle.
And, okay, we need, you know, this issue, Flash is going to come up against a gorilla,
you know,
and it's going to be underwater.
It worked,
and there's going to be a treasure and tentacles. And
I mean, if I don't know how many people like, you know, the Full Moon stuff, and when I was there, I was in there in the early 90s, I think it was, pretty much their heyday. You know, and they're right in the middle of doing the Puppet Master movies. And
I caught it later on video, but I liked a lot of them.
But it was pretty popular. They were fairly popular. I had to stop reading the scripts because I didn't want to work on the movies anymore. Mm-hmm. We'd watch the dailies that would come in. Like,
Wait a minute. So you'd been working on them and you'd read the scripts and then you got bored or tired.
Well, what happened was I can remember specifically what movie it was. It was Robot Wars.
In our distant future, on Nation at War.
Intruders in Marker 474, sir.
I want you to turn the intruders into stains.
We'll discover its strongest ally.
Our borders are not in dispute. The Eastern Alliance is on our side.
Has become their deadliest enemy. Fire! Robot Wars, from the producers of Robot Jocks.
And it was a big job for us. I worked at a place called David Allen Productions, where we did all the stop motion, miniature photography, rod puppets, and all that stuff for all the Full Moon movies. And, you know, we'd get the scripts, and there would be storyboards attached to them to see, you know, which stuff we had to do visually for the film. And I got halfway through the script, and oh, my God, this is horrible. This is so bad. And then the dailies would come in, and we watch them on a moviola. Before video comes in, and you know, people don't know what a moviola is. You get a 35-millimeter piece of film.
Yep.
It's a work print, and you run it through this machine. It's a little screen that's maybe 4 inches in diameter from, you know, corner to corner at an angle. And that's what we'd watch, you know, the live-action footage that we'd get in, and we'd have to do the visual effects to match the live action, and you know, and some of the stuff was so bad, you know. Just some of the dialogue in that movie Robot Wars, I was like, my God! And so I stopped. I said, I can't, you know. Just tell me what we're supposed to make.
Yeah,
you know,
that's too bad. I mean, yeah, at a certain point. But if you're a low rung in the ladder, then you don't have a say. Well,
people like the movies. I mean, they really did. I mean,
well, I tell you, I mean, everything I've watched from Full Moon, you know, I take with a grain of salt. I'm like, all right, this isn't going to be a huge budget. It's not going to have huge stars, but it might have something that's a little outrageous that I wouldn't see.
Like a factory when I was out there, and you know, we were pretty much working on three films at a time. You know, we'd be finishing up, like, say, you know, different crews. Like, for instance, when I started working there, I think Puppet Master 3 was just finishing up. Mm-hmm. I was starting to do Dr. Mordred.
In a Manhattan apartment, Dr. M. Tom Mordred has stood guard between our world and the dark dimensions. Now, after centuries of waiting, evil's ultimate warrior has arrived.
Cabal is a demon. Uses mortals to do his bidding.
What difference does it make if I want this dying planet?
A sorcerer is not a god.
Dr. Mordred, master of the unknown.
And as we finished Dr. Mordred, you know, then we'd be starting to do Robot Wars.
So it was a constant stream.
It was a constant, you know, and then we'd also, of course, we had to stop production a number of times because Charlie's checks weren't always good, and the money didn't always come in.
I've heard that about Charlie.
Yeah. So, and you know, the films were all made, I think at the time, the most expensive films were no more than like $700,000.
You know what he's doing this year?
I have no idea.
They're doing a roadshow of sort of a lecture and film like extravaganza. They're selling it like it's a festival. Uh-huh. Like, and you go and you see him give his talk, and then he sells his DVDs, and there's probably dancing girls and all sorts of stuff. I get emails from them all the time. And he's, you know, he's had a few movies in the last few years. Evil Bong and I can't remember, Ginger Dead Men.
I think they're even smaller projects than when I was working on the film.
Evil Bong. Dude, it's one scary trip.
He had lost everything. Yeah. You know, he had, when I was working for him, he was affiliated with Paramount Pictures. Mm-hmm. I mean, when the films were done, we'd
help distribute, right?
Yeah. Well, they were in partnership. And we'd go, we work on the movies, and occasionally we would go to Paramount Studios to watch the screening of the film when it was done with everybody.
Because these movies went to theaters.
So, well, they went to theaters. Like, I know Robot Wars would go to theaters and for foreign distribution. Like, I know it was real popular in Japan.
Right.
And it was direct to video in the United States. They would play like in LA.
So maybe
they would play in LA or in New York, possibly.
Subspecies, transfers.
Which I used to call subfeces.
Yes, it's very funny.
Yes, I know.
I like subspecies, darn it.
In the dark past, humans were their prey, and blood was their life.
I'm Radu. Find him before killing begins again.
Now in modern-day Transylvania, eternal evil has reawakened. Subspecies. The night has fangs.
Okay. And subspecies, too, I like.
It just kills me because we used to butcher the puppets all the time. We take puppets from one movie and butcher them to make them work in another movie.
You will do my bidding, and you're smashing it
We
up.
Did that. I took the subspecies puppet, and we modified it, and we put it in Dr. Mordred.
And then they went to make part two, and they had to take it apart again and put it back together. Yeah. But no, they get great production value out of location in those movies because you have that castle that he used in, you know, in Pit and the Pendulum and in the subspecies movies. And
yeah, that was in
Transfers 4 and 5, I think. They all had
Romania.
The Romanian castle.
Yeah.
So that,
because it cost 2 cents. This is no joke. They started going over shooting that stuff because the castle, this is, again, in the early 90s, and I know it's because we talked about it at the studio. They were getting the castle for like less than 50 bucks a day, like 23, 20, some ridiculously low cost. Mm-hmm. They'd rent it for a long time, and it averaged out to be this minuscule amount of money. And the crews and you know, would work for almost free. Mm-hmm. And at the time, you know, I mean, you know, the U.S. dollar was so strong to be able to go and shoot all the subfeces movies out there and do all that stuff for next to nothing.
And that's it for another episode of Mad Dog Movies. Check us out online at maddogmovies.com/podcast, or you can write to us via email at feedback@maddogmovies.com. Music for this episode was provided by Keith Handy. For more banjo music and strange trailers, check out the eye-popping sounds of Herschel Gordon Lewis from Birdman Records.